Hello, friends. Welcome to episode 14 of A Year-Long Conversation. Today, we're going to be talking about our political campaigns, the new Ponzi schemes, and why do people invest in these doomed campaigns? But it's really going to be broader. It's going to be kind of about the entire business of this election cycle. I think our elections have really become a big business, so we're kind of getting it into super PACs and financing, and is the media culpable and all this nonsense that's going on? Let me bring up my co-host, Blue in Alabama's Michael. Michael, how's it going?
As always, it's going great.
Now, were you able to get here, or did they have traffic blocked off when you were leaving the Trump rally?
Wait, you found out that I was there? I thought I did a good job, like trying to blend in. I had my camouflage shirt on, and I didn't figure any, I had a rebel flag flying. I didn't realize you would recognize me.
Well, you hit it pretty cleverly with that American flag ski mask that you were wearing, and also the camouflage baseball cap, but I saw you. No, actually, people, they think they might have seen me there, because since our last podcast, I've had a lot of questions about if I'm a Trump supporter, which I think if you listen to what we were saying, I think it's pretty clear that we are definitely going to back Hillary in the general election. And they've been trained this way because of the media to constantly see the short term, the short term, the short term. The American presidential race is not like any other country in the world. Other countries, they're like, oh, we'll have 2 weeks and we'll select the president. I mean, ours goes on for 2 years.
Yeah.
So we have insane, long, I mean, most of the presidential candidates have been running since last June, July. So it's so long. No other country does it this way, where usually they'll do 2-3 months and they'll elect the president. Canada, they recently broke a record for their presidential election because it was 3 months. And I'm like, man, if we had 3 months, I mean, a guy like Bernie would barely be getting out of bed in 3 months. I mean, but because it goes on for 2 years, people, they still see it in the short term, though. So when we say we want Trump to be the nominee, and that way Hillary can beat him soundly in November or whatever, all they're hearing about is that in the very, very short term, we're supporting Trump, not realizing the longer term goal of so he can get his ass kicked by the first woman president, which is exactly what I believe will happen, and I'm pretty confident will happen. And I also have to say, if Hillary can't beat Trump, I don't know who she could be. People say, well, you don't know that she'll beat him. And I'm like, I don't know who she could be if she doesn't beat him.
Yeah.
But when people keep saying anything can happen, they're picking that up from the media. Have you noticed that they're still playing this up like a horse race?
Yeah, which is ridiculous, because if you read either of our blogs or if you listen to this podcast, I mean, we've pretty much been saying that it's over, especially after March 15th.
March 15th, we should pretty much determine who the nominees were going to be. All the other media, they don't really want you to believe that because they need the viewers or whatever. But it is. I mean, March 15th, Hillary had a clean sweep. Trump had a very near clean sweep. And people right now are talking about John Kasich. And I'm like, are you fucking believe? I mean, John Kasich would have to get 98% of the remaining delegates. He has to get damn near 100% of the remaining.
Yeah.
There's no way he can win.
Right.
And his strategy is, but I can pick off enough delegates that we go to a tested convention, and they're not going to want Cruz or Trump, and I can get in there, which I have to say, I'm not a favor of that. People say, but Kasich's better than Trump, and I'm like, yeah, but when you're subverting democracy, which I consider that a subversion of democracy, and people keep saying, but Trump is a fascist, and I'm like, if you take the way people are voting and you throw it away and you pick who you want, that's fascism. You don't save democracy by saying the people are dumb, the people are wrong, we're going to throw out the results of this election.
Yeah.
And I think the Trump protesters right now in Phoenix, where they were trying to block the road, and it honestly, from the footage, it didn't even look like that many people. It looked like it was maybe 10 cars and maybe 50 people. It didn't look like it was that big a deal, certainly not like some of the standoffs we've seen out in Nevada before and Oregon.
Right.
And I mean, the West seems to have a militia problem. I don't know what's going on. I mean, you see these Clive and Bundy types and these Oregon types, and you know, Alabama sitting there like, God damn, we're being left out. I mean, we haven't had our militia. I mean, when they took down the Confederate flag, we barely put up a stake. We just rode around on our parking lot for a couple hours and went home. I mean, we haven't been awfully left out of the militia game. 50 people, maybe, and they were trying to block people, which is the dumbest fucking. I mean, honestly, people, I don't think you're realizing how much help you're giving Trump by doing something like that. It didn't look like that big a deal. Of course, the media, they're going to play this up, and they're going to run with this, and they're going to show this footage, and they cropped the images in such a way that it was so tight on those cars, it looked like a New York City traffic jam or something, but they're going to make it look like a big deal. And the headlines for Trump Nation out there are going to be minorities and liberals and loudmouth activists in the Liberal Party. They're trying to block us from even getting to a rally.
Yeah.
And what people are not maybe getting is that as much as they think Trump is a fascist and a terrible person and they need to stop him, for every action, there's a reaction. The reaction of the Trump fans is going going to be, they're the ones who are stopping us from getting to a rally that we are choosing to go to. And so to them, it looks like they're the fascists. There's no real such thing as liberal fascism in America, but that's not the way Republicans think about it. They think there's a constant subversion, a liberal Obama, he's going to have tanks marching through their house and steal their guns. And all this plays into their fears. It's like, we're choosing to go to a rally that we want to go to, and you're trying to stop us from getting there. I think this is helping Trump more than it's hurting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It is.
On Twitter, I put, after the Chicago rally, I said that all that's doing, when the Bernie fans, they stopped the Chicago rally and they thought they won a big victory, I said, that will help Trump and it will hurt Bernie. And they all said I was an idiot, and it hurt Bernie and it helped Trump.
Bernie walking
sweep on Super Tuesday, he should have probably won at least one of those states. He lost all of them, and Trump had a near clean sweep except for Ohio. And I don't think he would have won Missouri if that hadn't happened at the Chicago rally, and he may not have won Chicago or Illinois by that much. But when this happens, people are motivated to go vote for the guy, because when I see people on social media or whatever, and they feel like the rallies are being canceled, people are trying to stop us from getting to the rallies, they're shutting them down, I think that just creates a more passionate base for him than anything.
Absolutely. That's the thing. It's not, they're not hearing what the protesters are saying. They're looking at this guy is a Washington outsider that's going to change the way things are. And all of these people who are used to the status quo are trying to stop it. So we're going to go and back him even more. Like, we have to get out and help him because nobody else is. This is going to be the rallying cry.
Yeah, this is helping Trump because the protest and the stop Trump, stop Trump, never Trump, it's both showing up too late and too soon.
Yeah.
Because it's too late in the context of the primary is over. It's too soon in the context of, but the general election hasn't started.
Yeah.
So this whole thing of being like, well, now that there's nobody who could beat Trump in delegates, we're going to go full force and stop this guy from getting the primary. You wait, and then you go full force for Hillary. And that's how you beat. The only way you're going to beat this clown is not through blocking off a single fucking rally, it's through voting. Hillary's my gal. I'm going to show up. I'm going to vote for her. I'm going to turn all the purple states. And right now, most of the statisticians say that Hillary has at least a 65% chance of beating Trump. Pretty good, two-thirds. So you stop him in the general, but if they wanted to stop him in the primary, this should have happened like February or January. Yeah. I mean, this should have already happened before. This could have happened last year. But they didn't take Trump seriously because the media didn't take him seriously, and we didn't take Trump seriously. People say that we underestimated the threat of Trump, and we did, because the guy was ahead in every single poll. We missed all the warning signs, and we were talking about Rubio. Now he's dropped out of the race. We missed all the signs, but at this point, Rubio's gone. Kasich is mathematically impossible. Ted Cruz. The states coming up in April are mostly New England states. Oh, and by the way, New York, which Cruz went out of his way to insult with New York values. The latest poll came out today that said Trump was beating Ted Cruz in New York by 50 points. Okay, so the idea that anybody else is going to get that nomination besides Trump is fallacy, unless he truly doesn't have enough delegates at the convention, at which point Republican Party will have to say, do we steal it from this guy and give it to somebody who was way not as popular as him, which will look like exactly what it is. We stole it from Trump and his fans will go apeshit, or do we give it to him anyway and just play our cards and probably get beat in November, which I think at that point a lot of the people in the party would like to get beat in November, which is why Trump is a perfect candidate to face off against Hillary, because you have a party that doesn't even want him. So it's over. We knew it was over the second Rubio dropped out, and we kind of knew it was over when Rubio, now that we can talk about Rubio in the past tense, you know, there's always so many things that happen between these podcasts, but I guess the biggest story beside March 15th election results is that Rubio dropped out. Michael, were you sad to see this?
You know, I hated it. I did. I really thought he was going to turn this country around, but first met that a president, I thought we were on to something.
I know. I was sad to see Rubio go for my own selfish personal reasons, because we have the same birthday. Born the exact same day, so I didn't want my birthday to be associated with a loser. I wanted him to at least win the nomination. But, of course, now this only makes it easier when I run for president, so it will only help clear the way for me. So I never really hated Rubio because of the whole birthday connection, but at the same time, I am a little relieved to see him go, because now we don't have to entertain this false notion that he's a moderate, because people were only talking about him as a moderate in the context of Ted Cruz and Donald Trump. But I think on almost every issue, Rubio is really, except for immigration, he's not a moderate on anything. I mean, nothing. Mm-hmm. The GOP says, oh, if only they picked a moderate. I'm like, moderate to who? Rubio is a lot more conservative than Mitt Romney, John McCain, Bob Dole. I mean, he's considerably more conservative than anybody they've ever put up before. So I think if he had been the nominee, we'd all be talking about, if you take Ted Cruz and Trump out of the equation, Rubio would have been probably the most conservative nominee they've had in decades.
Yeah, he would.
I think now we don't have to really entertain this genteel Republican Party narrative of, oh, when you see a lot of the GOP establishment talking about it, they look like Scarlett O'Hara and Gone with the Wind. Oh, well, our way of life is ending, and now we have to come to grips, as if it was so beautiful. You watch Gone with the Wind, I'm like, they can't leave out slavery quite a bit in terms of, like, the way of the South, and I think the Republican Party leaves out the neocons and the Tea Party. I mean, they act like Trump is a new phenomenon for them, instead of what they should have said, well, we spent 8 years telling them the Democratic Party is evil, and Barack Obama's trying to steal everything they've got, and so we shouldn't really be too surprised that Trump is a nominee that reflects that viewpoint.
Mm-hmm. Trump is exactly what these people are looking for. And now that they have him, it's like, what did we do?
In terms of the overall media plan that this is a horse race, we have our blogs, and they don't make money, and we don't have a boss, we don't have employees, we pretty much do it ourselves, so we really could be a lot more irresponsible than we are. Like, when we write stories, we could put that Obama's conspiring with aliens to hijack Alabama's guns. I mean, we basically could write nonsense straight out of the National Enquirer, and our readership would probably go up. I mean, we'd probably get more traffic doing that.
Yeah, we would.
1,000 people would come talking about this crazy conspiracy theories and how idiotic these guys are, but we don't do that, and we go to Huffington Post and Salon, and they're insane most of the time, especially Salon. Salon is the liberal version of Fox News. People say that it doesn't exist. It does. It just exists as online and not as a TV station. And you look at supposedly credible print journalism, like Washington Post, which has gone completely off the rails this campaign season. When we look at these credible news sources and how they're really not credible anymore, yet they're making all this money or whatever, and we're over here writing fairly sensible, reality-based pieces, and we're not getting paid to do it. I mean, do we have this equation backwards, you think?
Yeah, I think we may. I think, especially if we're wanting publicity, if we're that desperate for publicity, I mean, we could take that other route. So
I don't know. I mean, I feel like we're over here, last episode we had about Trump, and trying to have an actual in-depth analysis of the guy, who is the guy, and figuring out who he is and who supports him in these things, and I feel like if we'd have just left it at Donald Trump is Hitler incarnate, here's why you must stop him, and then had it out there, I think people, we would have had 100,000 views or something. So I don't know. I feel like we'd get it backwards. I think the Washington Post and Wall Street Journal and all these supposedly credible outlets, they need to be doing more of what we're doing.
Yeah.
On March 15th, we had pretty much definitive proof that Hillary is going to be the nominee, and pretty much definitive proof that if Trump is not the nominee, it will be because there's some kind of thing at the convention that prevents him from being the nominee.
Mm-hmm.
And yet when we turn on MSNBC or CNN, they're still in it, folks. There's still a horse race. They're still going on. And I think it's because I know for the last 3 months, I've watched more CNN and MSNBC than the last 3 years. And for the last 6 months, I've watched more Fox News than the last ever. I've never watched this much Fox News. Before the first Republican debate, I had to find out what channel Fox News was on. I didn't even know. I had to search for it. So it's all a ratings game, right? I mean, it's pretty much that what most people are maybe not picking up on it, that the media has a rooting interest in keeping you convinced that this is a horse race.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest aspect that people aren't, I mean, they just don't get it. They don't see that aspect that first and foremost, they're in it to make money. If there's not a race, there's really no incentive to watch it. That would be like if the United States and Russia are playing a hockey game and we're not in the middle of a Cold War. Who really cares? The only reason we're watching this is so we can have another leg up.
Right. So now it's pretty much over, but I mean, we see daily articles. Sanders is still in it. On Twitter, I still get in daily. I thought, well, surely after it's obvious Bernie will lose the nomination, his fans will. No, I get daily Twitter wars with his fans, his insane Ron Paul-esque fans talking about, he's still in it. You don't know what you're talking about. And one even showed me a chart of the delegate math and talked about, here's how he's going to win, and this is the projection. It was a chart about what he would have to do to win the nomination. So it was like the wildest dreams kind of targets. And she was talking about this chart as though it was what's told to happen.
Yeah.
I mean, it was stuff like Bernie loses Maryland by only a point or two, even though right now he's 30 points down there. He loses New York by only a point or two, even though he's probably going to lose it by a lot more than that. And then he won every other state. It's going to be pretty impossible.
Yeah.
So this was after March 15th that we were arguing about this, and it was wrong about Super Tuesday goals. Like, he had lost Florida by more than that chart had said. He had lost North Carolina by more. He had lost Ohio, which he was supposed to win. stand by that chart. He had lost Illinois and Missouri. Even after that crazy-ass chart was made, they would have to go back and redo it again because he didn't even meet his March 15th goals. Every single contest, we don't know for sure. Tuesday, there's Democrats are going to have Idaho. Bernie's probably going to win Idaho. Whoopty fucking do. They're going to have Utah and Arizona. He's probably going to lose Arizona. I don't really know about Utah. But, I mean, every single contest they have, like if he loses Arizona and Utah, then he's even further behind and he's even further out of the running. Every contest they have that he loses, those charts of his projection to win, they become more and more and more crazy and ridiculous. I just feel like we're not going to see him go anywhere until it's mathematically, she's got the delegates she needs and it's fully over with.
Yeah, you're right. And I think that his supporters just don't get it. I think if you watch The Daily Show, Trevor Noah is playing off of March Madness right now and he has his third month mania bracket up and you get to pick like who angers you the most. And I think the perfect matchup that should be on there, I think should be the championship, should be like Donald Trump supporters and Bernie Sanders supporters, because I just get angry at both of them. Like, just constantly. Sure. Sure. I mean, yeah. They don't understand politics.
Right.
It's infuriating. Just trying to talk to them or explain something to them. Just, oh, God. I think that Bernie Sanders is just like his supporters. I don't think he realizes that it's over either. I think he really still thinks he can win.
I mean, I have to wonder. You're right. When it comes to ignorance, nobody tops Trump fans. But the second runners-up would probably be Bernie fans. Because,
yeah.
And they keep saying, but Trump and Bernie, they're winning all these independents. They're winning all these moderates. They're winning all these people who have never voted. And I'm like, obviously. When you talk to these people, it's clear they haven't ever voted before. Like, it's clear that they barely understand what a president does. It's pretty clear that they've not voted before because the whole checks and balances thing seems to be over their heads. I keep seeing this thing where Bernie, he went from saying that superdelegates are party crooks and total bullshit and all this stuff to now it's clear that he's going to lose in regular delegates. And now he's saying, well, I'm going to win superdelegates. So he's basically becoming every single week that he stays in this race. I lose respect for the man because before this campaign season started, I mean, I knew Bernie mostly as what most people know him as, like this crazy old backbencher of Congress. He's this guy from Vermont, I mean, if you had to come up with like a liberal senator from Vermont, Bernie Sanders would be your stock character. Like the guy's almost a stock character out of some place. He's almost out of a Republican fever dream of what they think a Democratic presidential candidate is more than what they really are.
Yeah.
The guy is so ridiculous, basically. And I think that before the campaign started, I was like, well, Bernie, he's a moldy old backbencher in Vermont. He's on the Senate, and it's good that he's there. Up until this campaign started, the Democratic Party had spent a lot of time on social issues and not as really much time on economic issues. And so I was like, he's there to really talk about income inequality and drive home this message of economic populism, which was good. And so I liked him a lot for those reasons. But this campaign, and the longer it goes on, the more I really kind of lose any respect for the guy. His reversal on superdelegates, it's crazy. 3 or 4 months ago when it looked like, oh, Hillary, she's probably going to win, like, the superdelegates, but she might lose the regular delegates. It was how evil superdelegates are, and now that it's clear that he's going to lose the popular vote, and he's going to lose the overall number of delegates, his whole strategy now is to either, one, hope that Hillary gets arrested, or two, hope that he can persuade the superdelegates that he's spent a lifetime playing against to call them shitheels to come over to his side so he can take the nomination from her. I'm like, if you had him taking the nomination from her at the convention because of superdelegates and not popular vote, just like, Bernie, do you think that might hurt your brand a little bit of being like Mr. Popular, not Mr. Inside Washington, not Mr. Party Politics? Do you think that might hurt your brand a little bit if you stole the nomination from the person who got the most votes because of superdelegates? I think it might have something to do with the hurting of your brand a little bit.
Yeah, you would think that. But then again, he would probably spin it in a way that he would spin it somehow. He would just how the political system is corrupt, and this is what I'm going to prevent from happening.
And a lot of stuff Bernie says is half correct. So he called out how Donald Trump is a compulsive liar. He lies all the time and about everything. Mm-hmm. 100% true. But he made himself seem honest, which I think is becoming increasingly less true. He's like, well, Trump, he distorts what he said before. And it's like, he keeps pointing to like these things that Bill Clinton did as though they're Hillary's failures, meanwhile forgetting that he voted for the 1994 crime bill. He voted against the Brady bill 5 times.
Yeah.
If you're talking about candidates that are dishonest, I mean, of course, Ted Cruz and Trump, they're liars. We know that. But I don't know that Bernie is really very honest in terms of most of the stuff that he says.
I think he says what he says to kind of get by. And then when you start questioning, when you question him on it, then that's when he just goes on one of his tangents.
Recently, he gave an interview, I think it was a TV station out of Arizona, where he walked out. They had asked him about the militiamen thing, and he gave a long answer that, of course, pivoted to income inequality. And they asked him about voting down the path to citizenship bill. He pivoted to income inequality, and he kept saying, Senator Clinton's trying to distort my record. Meanwhile, distorting her record as though Bill Clinton's failures are her failures, you know?
Yeah.
When you look at their actual time in Congress, Hillary and Bernie voted the same almost 100% of the time. They had very few votes where they were different. And so the fact that he's saying that Hillary's fate on progressive issues because Bill Clinton was not really a Democrat or whatever, I mean, I think most people who know them both say that Hillary's more liberal than Bill is and that she's always kind of been more liberal than Bill is. And then he asked him a couple more questions, and he wasn't even interrupting him. He was asking him something, and he let him finish. And then Bernie goes, "Thank you, I'm done," and he gets up and walks out. And he didn't say that after the guy just asked him a question. Bernie had just talked for 3 minutes straight about some bullshit, and then after he got done with his stump speech, he said, "Thank you," and he got up and left, and the guy goes, "This is the first time anybody's ever walked out of one of my interviews."
Wow.
This is not even a tough journalist. This is like the guy from fucking KACL TV, you know what I mean? Like some local affiliate out of Phoenix or Tucson or something. He wasn't even that tough on the guy. And I think that increasingly what you're seeing is that Bernie can't hold up to scrutiny. And but even more than that, I want to kind of get into the main thing, which is his campaign is over with, but he's still taking donations and money by the barrel. I mean, if you combine the amount of money he raised last year and this year, you're talking about $150 million. So if you combine last year's total and this year's total, he raised over $70 million last year. He raised about over $40 million in February, over $20 million in January. He's on track, maybe do even bigger business than that in March. So you're talking about a campaign that by the end of March will definitely have raised more than $150 million and perhaps even by the end of this whole fucking thing, the end of maybe possibly $200 million.
Yeah.
You got to look at that money and think, would this have not been better spent anywhere else?
Right. Yeah, completely. Completely agree with you.
Bernie talks all this shit about Wall Street fraud and Ponzi schemes, and I'm like, but if you're raising money by the barrel for a doomed presidential campaign, even after the point where you've lost and you pretty much know it's over, and you're still going to raise money and raise money and raise money, aren't you basically practicing the same Ponzi schemes that you've been raising the entire time?
Exactly.
Aren't you basically the fraudsters that you hate?
But again, this goes back to what we said about politicians before. I mean, I think we mentioned it about Ted Cruz. It's wrong when somebody else is doing it, but when you're doing it, just kind of look past some part of it.
Yeah, and Ted Cruz, what kills me is during a lot of the debates, he'll bring up that if you're against Washington corruption, vote against Donald Trump, and Ted Cruz is the guy that's a lobbyist, and Ted Cruz is receiving a ton of money from super PACs and lobbyists. When Ted Cruz sneezes, the oil companies catch a cold. And it's ridiculous. They talk about some of the Washington corruption he would take on, and he says, "I'd get rid of the ethanol subsidy," which the only reason for that is because the oil companies are giving him money to be against that. So I'd get rid of Obamacare, and it's probably because some of the health care companies don't like an aspect of the law or something. And Ted Cruz is not doing anything that's not what his backers want him to do. So this idea of he's positioning himself up as the voice of freedom in the new millennium, I mean, and he's another guy that he doesn't raise nearly as much money from individual contributions as Bernie does, but he raises a ton from super PACs. And there's a lot of stories out there this week that so far super PACs have spent over $200 million on failed presidential candidates in just this season. Even before we get to the general election, even before the congressional elections have even happened, so just the presidential primaries, they've spent over $200 million. None of it has gone to Trump or Clinton, the candidates. It's not just insane.
It is.
Most people are putting this election on track, saying that this could be the first billion-dollar election. Now, is this just corruption of another form?
Yeah, and I don't think people have really stopped to think about how insane it really is, because, I mean, like you said, I mean, they are throwing their money away on a failed campaign, and these candidates don't have the decency to basically say, "Look, it's over. Stop giving money. I can't win." They just keep taking the money in and wasting it. I mean,
they said that now John Kasich has started to rev up his fundraising efforts, and now he's going to start more directly trying to get contributions. And I'm like, why? So they can waste more money on a guy who's not going to be the nominee? Kasich, it's over.
Yeah.
It's over. On March 15th, they treated him like he was the conquering hero of Rome because
yeah.
he won his own state. I thought, you're the
yeah.
sitting governor of Ohio. It should have never even been in question that you were going to win that state. I
yeah.
mean, you're a sitting governor of a state that you just won, and you're acting like you did something, and that was your first win. The Republicans have had over, they've had half of their contest already. They've had a few more states than the Democrats have so far, and
mm-hmm.
they're more than halfway done, and that's Kasich's first win. He's only placed second. I think he's had like maybe two or three second place. He'd have to do a hell of a lot better, a hell of a lot fast to even get a majority of the delegates right now. I mean, right now, forget about the 1237. It don't even look possible for him to get a majority. I mean,
right.
It would basically be impossible for him to pass Trump's total, the necessary delegates. And he's like, well, we're going to have, like when Anderson Cooper, people keep calling it a contested convention, a brokered convention. Kasich's like, no, it'll be an open convention. Like, it sounds like such a nice thing. He's like, it'll be an open convention. It'll be a chance for the people's voices to be heard. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure they're being heard in this primary that we've been having for a fucking year. I mean, I'm pretty sure that's people's voices being heard, is the number of votes that are cast for you. But an open convention, that gives people a chance to directly voice their opinions. And I'm like, what do you think all this voting that we've done? What do you think that is? I don't know. So the fact that Kasich's now revving it up, and you'll have little old ladies probably sending him checks. I mean, this is just, it's really kind of becoming like the new televangelist.
Yeah, it is. That's a perfect example.
Hillary fans have drawn the comparison that Bernie is kind of a televangelist, and they've said people send in their checks, and it's like, oh, you send me a check, and Jesus is going to heal your cancer. Bernie's like, you send me a check, and I'll get you that free college you need. And speaking of dishonesty, Bernie said, he flip-flopped. He said, I never said I was for free tuition. I'm like, I'm pretty sure you made that a big deal in your campaign.
Yeah.
This past week, he's saying he never said it.
Wow, yeah. That's his whole thing. And
a major part of his campaign. And to hear
it is.
When you talk to his fans, they would tell you all about the free college system that Bernie's talking about. And then for him to go back and talk about it, he never really said that or whatever. And I'm like, this guy is still, like, going to lose the nomination. And already the pressure has been so enormous for him to reel back his proposals that he's,
mm-hmm.
even when it's like 100-1 that he would win the nomination, he's still out there being like, well, you know, it might be time to start walking back some of this. You know, like, that's how far-fetched it is. It ought to give his voters real concerns about the rest of the promises that he's made. But of course, it's not. What do you think Bernie could do at this point to get his fans to not support him?
Die.
Well, even him, he's not really dead. His ghost is still out there on the campaign trail talking about income inequality. He's still sucking into the main.
I mean, really, I mean, I don't know you're going to change some of these people's opinions. I mean, because they're so far, they're just so far out there. It's just like, really?
What do you think, like, I mean, this is another topic probably for a separate podcast, but what do you think we're missing about this guy?
I don't know.
I don't feel inspired by him. I don't feel motivated by him. I didn't really like him that much before I started running, but I don't really like him even less now. I mean, what are we missing? Like, what is there that people are just so drawn into? I mean, this guy doesn't, for most politicians that promise bullshit, because they keep saying this is about the issues, this is not about who Bernie is, but it's clearly not about the issues,
right?
Because Hillary's way better on almost every single, Hillary's campaign's about the issues. Like, I don't think most of the people really going for Hillary are got all the razzle-dazzle that they're looking for. Like, they're not really purely drawn to her for the charismatic reason. Bernie's campaign, it's a lot more personality-based, and it's a lot more about personality and charisma, and, but all these things, they're not things I associate with Bernie. Like, if you were just going for a guy because you like him, I would have thought, oh, he would have been a lot better.
Yeah. You know, I don't know what we're missing.
Good-looking guy. He's charismatic. People actually like being around him. But Bernie, I mean, I look at this guy, and I'm like, when I was trying to find pictures of the guy, it took forever to find a good picture of him. I was like, does this guy? I was like, boy, this guy just don't take a bad picture, sarcastically, because, I mean, I could barely find a good picture. I'm like, this fucker looks like Bill Gates is going to look in 20 years. Like, fucking $5 haircut, hair all over the place, glasses.
Yeah.
It's not the looks, it's not the charm, it's not voice.
No.
When Hillary won March 15th, the moderators were saying she's yelling too much, and I'm like, Bernie makes me exhausted. I mean, that guy's voice cracks by the end of the debate. Bernie yells constantly. They're going after Hillary for talking about yelling and not smiling or something. I mean, it was like, it was insane that they were talking this. I mean, people called it sexist, and I'm like, it is pretty sexist, but even more than that, when you heard your primary opponent is Bernie Sanders, it's ridiculous, like, that these are the criticisms. So I just, shallow campaign based around a guy that I don't think really wins on shallow reasons, like look, charm, and personality. I just don't get it.
My mom was watching a town hall, one of the 87 town hall events. My mom's not political at all. Couldn't care less, really, about politics. But Bernie was up there, and he was going crazy like he always does. And she looked at me, and she's like, are there flies up there? Like, is she, is he swatting at flies or what's he doing? Because he just like constantly waves his arms around and I'm like, yeah, that's Bernie. That's his Bernie. If you watch him, like, they'll make you tired from watching it.
I mean, I'm sorry for that side tangent, but I think when people look at these campaigns and Ben Carson's campaign, I think that was exposed as just a pure money laundering scheme or something, because this is a guy who, I mean, he raised, when I looked at his fundraising totals, my jaw fell off. Me talking about over $50 million. I mean, it was like crazy the amount of money that was coming in. But it was going right back out because his campaign was basically using these direct mailers. So they spent all this money on direct mailers. So they would bring in all this cash and they would burn all this cash trying to get more cash. And I'm like, if that ain't the death of the Ponzi scheme, I don't know what is. At a certain point, he had more money going out than he had coming in, and it was all about trying to get more money coming in. And I'm like, if this ain't a pyramid scheme, what is?
Yeah, that's literally the definition of one. I mean,
and then Carson's like, well, I didn't know what they were up to. And I'm like, either you're a crook or you don't know what your own campaign staff is up to, neither of which is presidential.
Yeah.
Like, we've heard
it's
both
very
Bernie,
Nixon-esque.
We've heard both Bernie people, have they broke into the database, stole a lot of Hillary's voter data. The Ted Cruz people have been up to all kind of dirty tricks. Ben Carson's campaign was, they could have been using it to launder money for the mob, for all I know. I mean, I don't know what the hell they were up to with that, with the accountant wing. And every time we didn't know about it, I'm like, if you don't know what your own presidential campaign is up to, how in the hell can you know anything when you're in the job of the presidency?
Exactly.
We saw Jeb Bush's campaign. Jeb Bush didn't make it past South Carolina, so he didn't make it. He had three states, and he didn't even make it to Nevada, and yet we saw this campaign raise over $100 million, almost $150 million. So, I mean, and now they're all like, well, Jeb's campaign war chest. I just look at all these millionaires and billionaires that are devoting all this money to presidential campaigns, and these are the same guys who were hell-bent on not paying any new money on taxes. And I'm like, if you save the money you spent on campaigns, you just paid the taxes, you'd be about to die. I mean, the amount of money you spend not to build a new hospital is the amount of money that you could have just built the fucking hospital. The money that went to Jeb Bush's campaign, take that, give it to Alabama schools, rebuild the hospital, pave a road. All the problems America's got with financing. America, in many ways, is a lot better off than people make it out to be. I think a lot of America's problem is a perception problem, because we're constantly being told that things are terrible from the media. Yeah, America's a lot better off than people like to let on, but some of the problems we do have are financing. We can't get a bridge rebuilt. We can't get a hospital redone. We can't get the road systems changed. We can't get high-speed rails. People talk about Flint, Michigan. I'm almost a little tired of hearing about it, because that lead piping situation, that's happened in a lot of other places. Yeah. Right now, what we need to be doing is spending money to rip out the piping and the water infrastructure in several major cities, redoing them all before we have the next Flint, Michigan, in a city a lot bigger than Flint, Michigan. Majority of our nation's pipes are not up to code, and we need to replace them immediately. And yet, people got the money to give Jeb Bush $150 million for presidential campaign so that he can deregulate and get rid of the EPA and make sure. And I'm like, just rebuild the fucking pipes. I mean, like, you might, in the long run, you might save money.
Yeah, I don't know if anybody noticed it. A couple of years ago, there was a neighborhood in Montgomery that basically had the exact same problem, and there were several kids contaminated and have a lot of health problems now because of it. There was a big lawsuit in Montgomery over the exact same issue. So, like you were saying,
this happens. This Flint, Michigan problem is not right. I mean,
I've
heard more about Flint fucking Michigan than I care to in five lifetimes.
Yeah.
This is a nationwide problem. Like you said, Montgomery, and there's other counties. When they have the list of the most polluted water systems, two of the top 10 counties were Alabama counties.
Yeah.
So
this
is big cities and rural America. It's both.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to immediately change the way that water and all this, I mean, they said a majority of the nation's drinking water right now is not safe to drink, unfiltered.
Yeah.
I don't think people are, they're not really getting that. Minnesota has a lot of EPA regulations. It's got a lot more than Alabama does, and it's supposedly got some of the best drinking water around, known as the land of 10,000 lakes, and I poured a glass of water that looked like milk. It had white, like chalk in it or some shit, in the supposedly clean blue state. So this is a nationwide problem.
Yeah.
And I just have to think that instead of spending millions, and perhaps by the end of this election cycle, billions, they said the Koch brothers, them and their donors, because they got about 40 to 50 people that are going to join hands in the super PAC, and they're going to, they've said that they're basically going to become a third financial party. Like, there's the Democrats and the Republicans, and they said that they're going to raise $1 billion this election cycle. I think they said that $900 million might even get up to $1 billion on congressional, Senate, presidential races this time. And I have to look at a billion $1 million and just think, your trucks are spending this amount of money to get out of EPA regulations rather than just doing the right thing. And just,
yeah,
if you just complied with the laws in the first place, you could save your $1 billion. And I know what they would say. Well, if we did everything the right way, it might cost $3 billion. And this way we only have to put in $10 million and everybody else puts in $10 million. The big business that our elections have become, just so some people can get what they want, is speechless.
Yeah, really. I mean, it is. It's unbelievable.
In 2012, version of the Koch brothers, Sheldon Adelson, he spent the most money in 2012. First, he tried to get Newt Gingrich. Then he tried to do Mitt Romney.
Yeah.
From 2008 to 2012, he had the most revenue increase of any individual American. So his profits went up more than anybody else. Made more money in Obama's first administration than anybody else in America. In 2012, he gave the most amount of money to defeat Barack Obama. I'm just like, what is your fucking problem? Like, you made more money during Obama's first term than anybody else in the country,
yeah,
and yet you're spending the most money to get rid of him.
Mm-hmm.
Whenever they talk about the Koch brothers are angry, they're mad, and I'm like, what do they have to be mad about? I mean, like, what are they mad about? I mean, what are the, fifth and sixth, three richest guys in America? What the fuck are they mad about?
Yeah.
And I look at that with Trump's anger. Trump's mad. And I'm like, this guy is a trust fund baby.
He's
now worth, he says $3 billion. Well, he says like $10 billion. Most people put his net worth at $3 billion. Who the fuck knows? We know he's a billionaire. Somewhere between probably $2 to $10 billion. Been married 3 times. His current wife is very attractive. He's got 4 kids that amazingly don't hate him. I'm like, you're Trump. You got a hot trophy wife. You got properties all over the world. You got homes in Florida, Las Vegas, New York, your name's on all these damn buildings, your company's named after you, which most people don't have. You could be the third richest man in America, but if your company's not named after you, people don't know who you are. Everybody knows who he is. He's had a TV show, he's rich, he's famous, he's mega rich. All 4 of his kids seem to be on really good terms with him. He's got grandkids, his legacy's secure. The fuck does this guy have to be mad about? And he's furious. You don't just have the fame and the money and the wife. I mean, your kids love you, which most rich people can't say.
Like,
most rich people, their kids don't speak to them, or they're not on that good of terms. And his son's named after him, spent all his time on the campaign trail. His daughter's very close. People suggest too close. Get all these grandkids. He's got a secured legacy and a shitload of money, and he's like in his late 60s. And the anger that I'm picking up on from millionaires and billionaires and why they're donating all this money, Michael, can you make heads or tails out of it? Because I can't.
Yeah, I can't either. I mean, the only explanation, he must really, really hate Mexicans.
But that's the thing, though. I don't even think he does. Like, I think the whole thing, like, his signature issue is immigration. I honestly don't think he cares about it.
Yeah.
I mean, this is a guy who basically brought a wife from, Yugoslavia to marry him. So, I mean, I don't think this is a guy who cares that much about immigration. As we talked about last podcast, it was the issue he needed to get to the right of most of the Republicans.
Right.
It was the perfect wedge issue for him, because it was a wedge between him and the Republican establishment. It was a brilliant campaign move to basically figure out, what does the majority of the Republican Party and the majority of the Republican voters, what are they the most a part of, which I do believe is immigration. So he drove that as a wedge between them, and honestly, I don't think the guy cares about it at all. I really don't think he cares. A lot of this anger from Adelson, Cokes, and Trump, it really feels more ego-driven than anything. I don't even know that it's about an individual issue so much as just about, we matter, goddammit, and you're going to hear what we've got to say. If we have to spend $1 billion, you're going to vote the way we care about. It just it feels largely ego-driven, to be honest.
Yeah, it is. And that's the thing. They have so much money that they don't need to make more money. They just want to be able to say, we have power. And I think that's what drives most of it.
I look at the Kochs specifically, and I think neither one of you guys is probably going to live more than 5 more years. Unless you figure out some kind of way to, like, put your mind inside the mind of a robot or something. Like, one of them's got cancer. Like, honestly, one of those brothers would probably already be dead if he weren't rich and had the best medical treatment in the world. But, I mean, I look at them and I just think, you've got more money. If they spent $10 million every day for the rest of their life, they probably could run out of money. You've got more money than you'll ever spend. If you don't waste it frivolously, you've got money for generations. Your great-grandkids will never have a job if you don't waste any of this money. You have all these things, and you're furious and you're angry and you're worried about shit that they're worried about. I'm like, if I was 70 years old and had billions of dollars, would I be sitting there thinking, like, they're going to increase my taxes by 2%? I mean, fuck you. I mean, really? really whining about your taxes at a time when middle class hadn't had a wage increase in decades. Like, oh, you're only worth $10 billion. Geez, how's a guy supposed to eat? I just have to look at that and think, right now, they should be thinking about a legacy. They shouldn't be thinking about the next 10 years, how am I going to increase quarterly profits? They should think about a legacy and about how people are going to remember them. They took a sizable chunk of their fortune and said, we're going to use it to redo all the pots in America and get rid of that infrastructure problem because something's got to be done about this. And they overnight changed the goodwill that's been shown towards them. I just had to think that would be money better spent than figuring out how to get a Congress in there that will give you a tax cut.
Yeah, it would be.
Even if they're not good people, think about it from selfish perspectives. Like, think about it from how people will remember you and your company. Because right now, a lot of I get emails all the time saying the Koch brothers bought this company, don't buy their products.
Yeah.
So, like, I know to avoid a certain type of paper towel, a certain type of toilet paper, they make these products that now a good chunk of Americans that know that they make them, they're now avoiding them.
Mm-hmm.
I have to think in the long term, spending some of that money and doing a little bit of public good, if you think purely selfishly about it, it might help even get you some goodwill towards the future generation or whenever your kids take over the company. Men like that, they're all the same. They all, they're going to live forever. And so all they care about is get a dollar more, because they think they can live forever and they may need $80 billion when they're, when they're 100 years old. They might need that extra $1 billion.
Which is absolutely ridiculous to think about. But that's the thing. They've lived their life building up all of this wealth, and I don't think they have it in them to do what's right. I think they spent their entire life worrying about money, 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 and they're not thinking about, and you have your exceptions. You have your Warren Buffett, but for every Warren Buffett, you have 10 other Koch brother type.
People have made a good point. If you're the kind of guy who's able to amass that much money in the first place, you're not ever going to be the kind of person who's going to say, well, I think I've made enough. Like that greed that's driving you to, because the Koch brothers, remember, they had two other brothers that got pushed out of the company. Like they pushed two of their other brothers out of the company. So they looked at it and said, oh, wait, there's not even enough for the four of us. There needs to be two of us, and we're going to push out these other two guys. So when you're able to cut their oldest brother that they believe was gay, they threatened to blackmail him to their father to basically get him to renounce his shares of the company. So when you're able to, like, stab your own brother in the back to get a little bit more money, I mean, it's like, oh, we went from $2 billion to $3 billion, and all we had to do was kill our brother to get it. You're able to, like, when you're able to, like, push two of your own brothers out to get more and more and more and more, you're probably not ever going to be the kind of person that could say, I had a good life, time to give it all away to charity. Like, it's time to let some of this money go and let it go to good, needy people who need it.
Yeah.
But if we have any closing statements, I would just say to the people sending money and by the barrels out there, John Kasich, please, little old ladies out there with your Social Security checks coming in, don't give it to a political campaign. Like, you need it. College students out there giving Bernie, you need it, because you're probably going to have a shitload of debt when you get out of there. I know they're thinking, I'll give Bernie money now, he'll get rid of my student loan debt. No, you're going to have student loan debt. Save that money. Maybe go put that shit in an IRA or something and, like, get some compound interest going on that money. Because a lot of the Jeb Bush people like that, I think their campaigns are nefarious because they're just getting money from Chamber of Commerce types and they can get $1 million from a corporation on their super PAC. With Bernie, it may be even worse. He keeps bragging about how poor his average contributor is. And I'm like, well, shouldn't they be saving their money? They're giving you.
Yeah.
It might have been John Kasich. Yeah, this old lady said, I've only got $50 and I got to give it to you. And I thought, it just brought tears to my eyes. And I'm like, you should have said, save your money. If you've only got $50,
you need
it more than I do. This idea of, like, politicians being like, I'm so glad how poor the people giving to me are. They should say, save your money. Keep it. You need it more than I do. 1,000 jokes about shady politicians and crooked politicians. The classic joke was, there was a barber who said he wanted to do a good deed. And a florist came in and he said, I'll give you a free haircut. And the guy said, no, let me pay you. And he said, No. Just giving you a free haircut, that's all the payment I need. The next day, the florist says a dozen roses over to the guy. Right after that, a baker comes in and gets his haircut. Same thing. The very next day, a dozen pies are outside the guy's door. Well, then a politician comes in and he gets a free haircut. And the next day, a dozen politicians are outside the shop waiting for their free haircut. I mean,
hopefully one day we can open up our eyes and realize, well, not us, we realize it, but hopefully, hopefully everybody else.
It's wrong for Kasich to do it, because he literally has no chance of becoming the nominee.
Yeah.
And it's wrong for Bernie to do it because he has almost no chance. But even if people say, but you can't say that. Bernie might have a, I'm like, yeah, but every dollar he takes doesn't go to a Democratic candidate. Like right now, Hillary has the victory fund for down ticket Dems. So when you give Hillary money, she puts some of it away to help the Senate, congressional, all these other kind of races. I mean, $150 million that's went to Bernie's campaign. If that had gone to the DNC instead, we could take back the Senate. And I just think that, like, in the Republican case, it's wasteful because a lot of that money should be going to charity or it should be going to the infrastructure projects that they don't want to pay for through tax dollars. In Bernie specifically's case, it's wasteful because he's not helping other Democrats at all. I know people are saying, well, his fans, they may not give the Democratic candidates, which in that case, that's a whole other problem. Every dollar that goes to him, if 50 cents of that was a dollar that could have gone to the DNC or a congressional candidate or something, then that money would be way better spent. I mean, it's going to be a tough fight, but I believe we can retake the Senate this year if we put the money and resources behind it. And if Trump is the nominee and does something crazy, asinine, stupid, whatever you want to call it, we have a very good chance of taking the Senate back. Like, he might cost them a lot of votes.
Let's hope people come to our senses. Let's hope that everybody just decides to stop giving money to all these campaigns and Hillary pulls out the win, and as we all know, she's going to, and then we don't have to worry about this anymore, at least for another 2 years when the next campaign starts.
We've had the military-industrial complex, pharmaceutical-industrial complex, all these complexes. Right now, we have an election-industrial complex.
Yeah, we do.
We have elections every 2 years, and they always cost a fortune. I feel like in America, we never stop the races, and I bet there's a lot of political consultants out there that are grateful. We're talking sometimes millions, this year probably billions of dollars going down the drain. And it's an election industrial complex. But anyway, folks, join us next time. We'll be talking about what type of president each candidate would make and our forecast for the future. Every fifth episode, we like to do some type of forecasting and prediction. So come back next time and join us. Michael, what's your web address for us?
BlueInAlabama.wordpress.com.
Okay, and of course, you can find me at AlabamaLiberal.com. Thanks for listening, everybody.